Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tron. Han, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous, Jim. Just fabulous. How about yourself?
Very good. Very good. We've got an extremely interesting, I'm going to call it a topic that has been asked of us so many times. Obviously, this is Straight Talk, episode number 63. Tonight's topic, do I really need MEP, a permit? It's like we've heard that question so many times of so many of our clients over the many, many years that we've been doing this. We've heard that question. Do I really need mechanical drawings and engineering? Do I really need electrical drawings and engineering? Heck, do I even need a permit? You know, that has been, again, asked of us so many times. So we thought, Han and I were discussing topics, and we said, you know, this would be a great topic. Matter of fact, I think, Han, you even said that there had been some discussions about this similar topic on Dental Town as well.
It's discussed all the time.
Yeah.
I think it depends on what part of the country you're in. It seems like it's predominantly the questions about the type of drawings you need and must have and stuff like that come out of the great state of Texas. Okay, that seems like where the most confusion come from. Okay.
Well, and the reason why is we'll just kind of jump right into that particular situation. The state of Texas is unlike most every other state in the country, with the exception, I think there's one other, but mostly Texas, that does not require a architectural stamp from a registered architect on a project of 5,000 square feet or less. So no matter what you're building, if it's less than 5,000 square feet, you don't need to have an architect, a licensed architect in the state of Texas, stamp the drawings. Correct me if I'm wrong, Han, but you do need an engineer to stamp the drawings. And that would be both, you know, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and structural. So those are requirements no matter whatever you're building, everything from a little dinky project to, of course, you know, multiple operatories, to thousands and thousands of square feet, all that kind of stuff. But back to the original comment of, you know, do I really need these things because they cost so much? So we're gonna get into the whys and the wheres and why you'd really want to have this, where you should be focusing your money and your effort on, and just to understand the realities of what these folks do, what we do, and what's all necessary around a permit. So I think let's, for this topic of tonight, let's start with the permitting side, because then we'll jump into that. I think that'll segue into the aspect of the engineering services. So from a permit, for those that haven't done a building project before, a permit is something that's granted by the local municipality so that you can build whatever you're going to build. It could be anything from a small addition, renovation, to just moving some walls around in your existing building to a brand new facility. But mostly this question is asked is, do I really need one? Is really when you only have that minimal kind of, you know, someone wants to go in and move two or three walls, or somebody wants to go in and do a little renovation on the inside. Doesn't it, Han? We get that a lot of times.
Yeah, I think Jim, the rule of thumb when we approach projects and the question when the question posed to us is that, hey, I'm just going to move a wall. For us, the rule, the three pillar of our rules that we need to stick by is life, health, and safety. Okay, so thinking is that any time that anything that we do, any type of renovation, big or small, it affects any either three life, safety, or health, more than likely a permit will be involved. We had personally, we have a project where they just simply put in a single wall with a door to divide or to secure, a particular part of the building, and just adding a wall that's only 6 feet wide and a door, and you have to have a set of permit drawing. Okay, so it all depends on the municipality and the amount of work they've got to do. Jim?
And we don't go through these things, and we don't do these topics, and we don't do this show to kind of scare you. That's not the case. Really, the reason why we're doing this why we're taking the time out, and thankfully, with all our listeners, you folks understand that we're here to impart information, to give you knowledge that maybe you don't have. That knowledge is something that others have maybe learned the hard way. And, you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel or, as my dad used to say, always would say, why get your nose bloody when somebody else has already done that? There's no need for that. If you can get that information without having to go through the hard times, you're much better off. And so we're here to provide this information so that you can have that knowledge to make better decisions about what you're going to do as you move forward in what you're trying to accomplish. So, and Han, you're exactly correct. Moving one little wall or adding one little particular thing, if it impacts that particular space, you are going to be required to have a building permit. Now, if you're going to go in and change the carpet, probably not. If you're going to paint the walls, probably not. But if you move something, you change a door. If you replace a door that already exists, probably not. That's not a rearranging thing. But if you touch anything in the way of tearing down or adding to, more than likely you will. And what's necessary to get a permit? Well, that's going to vary from whatever area you are within the country and whatever you're trying to accomplish. It could be very simple, could be on one little piece of paper, very simplistic. You're going to put in this wall. It's going to have a door. It's going to be this high. It's going to be made out of this material. And that could suffice to be able to get you your building permit. In other municipalities, there could be a lot of other things that would be required. So you got to hire a professional who understands the municipality requirements to be able to get you the necessary drawings so that you can get the permit through and then have a builder build what's necessary.
There's a presumption that if there is a building that somebody done some work and they didn't have pool permit, therefore automatically you qualify under the same same activities. It's a really bad assumption. Rule change, code change, requirement change, personnel change. And so whenever you embark into a a process where you're going to renovate, modify your facility, add on, or whatever the case is, that is the time, starting at that point is when you talk to the official and the professional to help you out, because what somebody else did somewhere else, some other time, does not apply. It's irrelevant. So work with, work with the current requirement rather than what somebody else done even 2 or 3 months ago. Rule change. And we have had projects where work on it, and we know that there's a certain date where the new code will be adopted. So if we submit our work prior to that date, then it will be reviewed under the current code. After that date, it will be reviewed in the new code. Those things dictate how we design, what we design, because if you don't meet or are in compliance with the code, you're gonna win yourself in trouble. Jim?
Right. You bring up an extremely important point, and it has to do with that terminology called grandfathered. Now, what that means is, let's say you have an existing building that has been operating as its function. Let's say it's been a dental office for many years, and the original design was done, let's say back in the 70s. Well, codes were totally different back then, and the requirements necessary to be able to get your building permit were different then. So now you want to go in and make some adjustments to that particular building. Are you going to have to bring that whole building up to code? What do you think, Han?
No. I think there is some flexibility. If you're remodeling, then there is a certain dollar amount when you cross over above the allowable dollar amount, then you have to bring everything up to code. But in general, if you're just renovating, whatever you touch, you have to bring it up to code.
That's okay. The important part. Whatever you touch,
yep,
you have to bring up to code. We've had projects, we've worked on particular projects that maybe say, there's two stairways in the facility. And back when they were originally built, the stairways didn't need to be as wide as they are today. And so those existing stairways may be grandfathered. But if you go to touch something, meaning you, like on the second floor, and you go in and are adding to the occupancy of that second floor because you're making some renovations, the code official, to get you, and remember, we're talking about to get a building permit, the code official is going to require that you adjust one of those stairs or add a third stair that satisfies code in its requirement for width, because you've touched that floor and affected the occupancy. The same thing happens with corridors. The same thing happens with toilet fixture counts. A lot of things get affected when you look at that, and it all has to do with what's necessary to be able to create and get you a permit so that you can move forward. So when we're asked that question, this stuff costs, it's so much money. Well, yeah, it does. Obviously, Han and I and people like us don't work for free, and neither do you. You don't work for free. I mean, sure, we all donate some of our services to the appropriate situations, but that's a donation. That's not working for free. And the same difference is you need to have this information to be able to get out there and get a permit. Just going off and deciding you wanted to do something and have a I guess, have a builder just go in and build it, you risk quite a lot. You really do. You risk quite a lot because it's not an issue of during that construction and getting it done. It's every day thereafter, because like in our municipality and a lot of others around the country, the fire marshal comes in on every six-month basis, don't they, hon?
That's why they do. It's part of their job. They come in minimum once a year to make sure that you didn't purposely move a wall, subdivide the space, lock up the door, you know, or turn off their fire sprinkler system. They are an important part of that three item: life, safety, and health. There's a lot of good people out there, but once in a while you read about, heard on the news, the unfortunate, establishment got burned down or whatever because a bunch of people get hurt. So that's part of their job. They do that. And by the way, the part of the review process involved the fire marshal. They sign off. They look at and they sign off on it. So they are somewhat familiar with the building that you are in or the building that you're trying to build. And so when the comments that I often hear is nobody would know, the building official is not going to come back and look at your building after you get your certificate of occupancy. You can rip out the toilet, rip out the drinking fountain, do whatever you want because you already achieved the certificate of occupancy. They forget that the other team member of that review process are the fire marshal. And they come every year, once or twice a year. Jim, do they have to make announcement that they're coming?
Nope. Just show up. Say hello.
Surprise.
I'm here to do an inspection.
And that's the way they usually do it. Okay.
Right.
They pop in and they pop in and they go like, oh, where's your fire extinguisher? You know, why is this or that? And they write you up. Right? So yeah, building official, the fire marshal is like the eyes and ears of the city after you get your building done.
Right. Jim? And they do things like checking egress requirements. They'll check to make sure, like you say, corridors and doors haven't been permanently locked that maybe are required exits. They'll check your emergency exit lighting to make sure that the batteries are working properly and that everything is charged. They'll check fire extinguishers to make sure they're in service so that if they're too old, they have to be replaced. They'll do all that stuff. And again, going back to what Han said, you know, life, safety, and health. And that's what their requirement is. And if they go in and see that you've blocked the door or rearranged the scenario, these guys and ladies are smart. They know what they're doing, and they're well trained, and they'll be able to notice that stuff. So you'll find yourself that you're going to be looking at redoing some things back to where they would be a lot of times, and it ends up just costing you a lot of money. And we've had a scenario. Here's a particular very common scenario that happens in dental offices. Let's say you have a basement as part of your facility. When it was originally created, the basement was not classified as storage. But all of a sudden, you've run out of room upstairs for all of your charts. And so now you start taking all your charts and putting them downstairs in a bunch of shelves. Well, the fire marshal walks around, sees everything, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, I've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sheets of flammable paper that are in this basement, which is not classified as a storage. It doesn't have the necessary fire rating. It isn't sprinkled, whatever the requirements might be. That's a violation. That is an issue. It has to be resolved. You got one or two options. Take all your stuff out of the basement and bring it back the way it was, or upgrade the basement area so that you can consider it as a storage of a flammable material. That happens all the time. And a lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, and a lot of dentists don't understand that. You can't just call something one thing today and call it something different tomorrow. There's ramifications. And like Han said, it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. Actually, once in a while, I would see, this is before the construction, okay? Drawing or design that are posted for critique. And I would see notation like future, in fact, just recently one, future toilet. This is in the doctor's private office. And they call out for a private toilet room or a janitor closet. Okay? It was a janitor closet future toilet room. Now, trust me, this folks that are, that go around with the clipboard and look at your building and look at your layout and inspect the building and stuff like that, they're no dummies. I mean, most of them have been around the block and they know the tricks. They know what people try to do. They may have done that themselves when they were involved in the construction and stuff like that, because most of these people come out of engineering, architectural, or construction. So they just didn't graduate from college with a degree and no experience. But anyway, the problem when you look at a drawing, most of the time, those who have the experience, the in-depth experience, can ascertain what the owner or the creator of that drawing was trying to do. Okay, when you try to pull the wool over the building official, that don't sit well with them. So if you're going to use a space and call it a toilet room, make sure it's a toilet room. Because when they walk into a closet and there is a drain on the floor and water line in the wall, somebody's going to do something down the road. Okay, they're not stupid. So save yourself the headache, okay? Save yourself the aggravation. Save yourself some money. Just have it designed properly from the get-go.
So okay? let's talk about that, because that jumps right into the other aspect of our subject, which happens to do I need mechanical drawings? Do I need electrical drawings? Do I need plumbing drawings? Well, the answer is it depends on what you're doing. But more than likely, yes. And the reason why, got to look at the overall picture, the goal of what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to do, more than likely, a renovation to your space. I mean, you're not going to be asking that question if you're building a new building, because you got to have it. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. But, if you're doing a renovation to a space and you're not moving any plumbing, no, you don't need to have plumbing drawings. But if you're moving a wall, more than likely you're going to need to have electrical drawings. If you're moving a wall, there's a good chance you're going to have mechanical drawings, meaning, ductwork and heating and air conditioning, because what have you done to the space? And have you changed it so much that the ductwork needs to be reworked? We don't know. So that has to be looked at and it has to be adjusted. Are you going to be changing this to the point where you need to have an exit fixture placed because you've got a new door and it's part of the exit corridor? And so now maybe you have a requirement for an exit sign or an alarm system, a fire alarm, exit light, emergency exit light, a strobe. There's just a menagerie. I mean, there's a ton of things that yeah. go into this. I mean, even the aspect of the code requirement for electrical outlets. Every wall has to have so many outlets per foot. If you move the wall or add a wall, you're going to have to put an electrical outlet in it, almost guaranteed. Well, how do you do that? You just don't do it. This is a commercial building. It's not like it's your house. It's a commercial structure. It's It's a structure used by the public. And that's the reason why they're so stringent about all this stuff. It's used by the public. And they deal with the, you know, the health, the safe, life and safety of the public. And so that requirement would have to be identified.
Huh? And Jim, the term public, there is a gray area of sort, but it depends on the building official. The term public include your staff, and it also includes you, the owner.
Absolutely.
The word public often are misconstrued. The code usually is written to protect all occupants, not just the public. Okay, there's some area in the building that your customer, your patient, the public don't go into. Hopefully, you don't invite your patient to take a tour of your new sterilization area. Okay, that's a work zone. It's not a place that you route your patient through. But that term public is often misconstrued that it's only for the patients. It's referred to everyone within the building.
That's an extremely good point. You're right. It's everyone who uses that building because it's open to everyone. And it's even to the point if you were to have signage that said staff only or, you know, no entry, it doesn't matter. And let's say you had a signage that said no entry into your basement area. It doesn't matter. That basement has to be up to code for use of the public. So even if your clients, your patients are not listening to your requirements, it doesn't matter because any space within that building is considered a usable, occupiable space. The only time you can get around this is if it is a non-occupiable space. And those are very, very stringent. It has to have a lot of criteria established, and more than likely they're ones that don't even have access, or maybe they have access only by a small little 30-inch square door. And I'm talking about things like crawl spaces. I'm talking about things like mechanical chases. Those things are non-occupiable spaces. They're not held to that requirement that all the rest of the building are. So there is that kind of gray area. Attics, for example, as long as you don't have the ability to get up there with a stairway and somebody could accidentally get up into the attic. But an attic would be considered a non-occupiable space.
In general, it is. The only time that, the only time that the code might even give you some heartburn is that you're going to have eventually, if you have equipment within the room, somebody's going to service it. But the code do take exception, for those requirements. But they have special rating, the walls and the doors and all that. Are addressed accordingly to based on the fire rating of the space, which is dictated by the size and its function. Jim?
Now, if you take your records in boxes and stick them up in the attic, all of a sudden you created an occupiable space that has to be classified as storage.
And that's right.
There's no way to defend that. Other than that's what it is. So, we don't mean to laugh because I know I'm sure there's a lot of them going, holy crap, did we do that? Are we doing that? Yeah. You could be in violation.
Yeah, but if you are, okay, fix that.
Get it fixed. So from the aspect of these things cost so much money. In reality, they don't. Because all the issues, the problems, the things that are necessary when it comes to engineering drawings, and even for that matter, architectural drawings, you solve all those problems. You solve all the things that need to be solved. You correctly place them on drawing, on paper, that then a builder can very thoroughly, very quickly create and build for you. And I guess the one topic we need to talk about, Han, is what's the real benefit of having a thorough set of documents versus what do we like to call them, the napkin sketch? Yeah, the napkin sketch. Yeah, so I'll let you address that because I know we've talked about this at length. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's place you in the position where, see, the building is our patient. We're the doctors that deals with buildings. Some of them are sick, some of them are new, and so on. So let's talk in terms that you will grasp easily. When a patient come in, there is a certain protocol you go through to collect information, history, how you're feeling, what's the conditions, and all that stuff. So that way you have enough information to determine what course of action, what treatment plan would be appropriate, and how long the treatment plan would exist, would play out. So we do the same. Okay, the document that we work with, that we create, are typically just chock full of information. They're not irrelevant information. Every dot, every line, everything has a purpose. It is served to give guidance, direction, set limits, and all that for those who depend on it to build. So if a contractor don't understand something because there's no information, hopefully he'll call the architect. That's why we usually highly recommend that you have a technical advisor on your project other than the guy who's trying to build it for you. That would be the architect. You are not in the position to make the call, to make the to respond to technical issues. So it'd be the drawing, the full-blown detail to the drawing. There's a number of pluses when you have that to work with. You take a full, well-documented set of drawing with all the details, everything called out, and you submit it to the building, the city, to pull permit. They look at the set of drawing. They can follow through. Everything is there to answer all their questions, things that relate to code, things related to wall assembly. Everything is there on their fingertip. They just flip through the drawing, and they can follow it. That makes their work really, really super easy. It makes it almost a pleasure for them because everything's there. On the opposite spectrum, if you have a set of drawing that just kind of thrown together with just barely enough information to give you maybe the size of the building, the square footage of the building, one wall section, a very common, simple wall section, and nothing else, you're going to be in trouble. The first thing is they take out a blank sheet of paper and they start on question number one, question number two. In that process of review, if you get a response from the city, let's say approve, that means they didn't find anything. Okay, on the worst side, that you get a setup, you get a letter from the city that are two or three pages of citation, violations, or misinformation or lack of information that require clarification, require more drawing, and things like that. That usually means trouble, because That means it will require more time, more drawing engineering time. Once all the questions are answered, that all the drawing has to be updated to provide supporting information, and then you send it back in. I don't know if there's, I'm not certain if there's any additional cost required, because I don't believe there is.
Nine times out of ten, you're going to pay a re-review fee.
A resubmittal.
Yep.
Is it based on how severe it is?
Really based on most municipalities. There's some that don't, but most municipalities are going to require a certain flat fee for a resubmittal, and it's usually a percentage of what the original fee was. But the important thing is that fee is pennies compared to time lost, because Han, as you talk about the resubmittal, the building officials are busy people, and so they're usually understaffed and overworked. And I say that because we have dealt with hundreds of them across the country, and 99% of them are overworked and understaffed. It's just the way it is. And so they basically have this system of first come, first serve. So
that's right.
You get in line. So once you've submitted, you've gone through the line. Okay, you may be submit. You know, you want to do something fun when you have your architect or your builder who submits the drawings for review. Ask them what you are in line. That'll give you an idea how long it's going to take. You know, you may be number 10, or you may be number 200, depending on how big your city is. And you get in line. Once you get to the point where the plans examiner looks at all your drawings to be able to say yay or nay on your permit, then let's say you get an approval, great, you're off and running. But if you don't get an approval and you get that resubmit or rejected thing, you get back in line. So you've lost the time, you've lost the energy, and the building officials say, it's not fair for me to throw you back at the front of the line just because you didn't do it right the first time. And so we've talked, how many times during this show have we talked about time is money? I mean, every month you're losing how much per operatory, and how many operatories are you dealing with? I mean, so depending on what you're doing, it could be a very costly issue by not having the necessary accurate, dimensioned, thoroughly thought out documents, both mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, architectural, all the stuff necessary for even a simple little addition. You got to have all of that put together. You have it all put together, you go through the building department, boom, they review it. You know, granted, you got to get through the line. Once you get to the head of the line, they review it, give you approval, and away you go. What's that save you? That saved you a ton of time and frustration, stomach acid, all the other things that you end up dealing with when you're trying to get something accomplished. Because we all know we're trying to get it done as quickly as possible, right?
Yeah.
So how many times have we heard? I just want to get this thing started and let's get finished.
And you can't start it until you get permit. Okay.
Yeah.
The important thing is to have a set of documents. I don't care who created for you. Okay. Have it well documented, well detailed. You know, the city will tell you what they expect. Okay.
As a minimum. Yeah, they will.
They will. All right. And they may give you some idea how much time before they can get to your drawings. But in general, if you have a good set of documents and the city building department are moderately busy, you should be able to get through within a couple of weeks. I mean, I've heard horror stories, okay, about people submitting their drawing. They don't get approval for, 6 or 9 months. All right. I'm scratching my head when I heard that. It's like, what the heck happened? What did you submit? What was given to the city? What wasn't done? Because in general, there is a certain rule of thumb. There's a certain things you do, okay? If you provide sufficient information and you dot all your I's, cross all your T's, you'll make sure that you have, in general, the exit door swings outward in general. Code allows some other, a variation. If you're required to have, two toilet rooms, make sure you have two toilet rooms. If it's required to be ADA, make sure it's ADA. Don't play any game. Do it. Okay? If you want a private toilet in your office and your contractor say, I've done plenty of this and just put in a non-ADA toilet room. Well, unless you can put it in writing, don't believe them. Okay? Get it confirmed, but make sure all your I's are dotted, all your T's are crossed, you submit to there, and you should be able to start building within a few weeks down the road. Otherwise, it's going to vacillate in the pile for weeks, for months, and meanwhile, you're losing daylight. So have the proper information with the documentation and all that stuff, and like Jim said, it will save you a lot of stomach lining, money, and time as well. Jim? Jim?
Sorry. Accidentally had it on mute. We heard that there's been some times that builders, for example, have said that, they can take care of the mechanical, the electrical, the plumbing drawings. Well, they'll have their guys get the necessary documents together and be able to satisfy the requirement for the permit. Well, that is a possibility. You don't just have to hire a consulting engineer or a firm like ourselves that have consulting engineers that work for us. But be careful. Just be very careful and make sure that you have a thorough understanding of the capability of those contractors, those subcontractors. Because it's happened before. When a builder says, I can do that, but down the road it comes up, I really can't do that. The group that I was going to use is too busy and I can't find somebody else to do it. Then all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball. You've lost all the time and energy when you could have had that done by the professional engineer through the design firm. And now you've got to rework the schedule. You've got to play catch up and you've got to get them integrated because you have to have it done. You can't get away without it. So you have to have it done. It has to be stamped appropriately so that the permit can be pulled. And that could hold true for a very small little addition, just as much as a big renovation or a large project. It doesn't matter how big it is. It's just a matter of the necessary work. I mean, and that's mechanical. That's heating and air conditioning. That's electrical. That's plumbing. It could be structural. All those areas of engineering have to be accomplished and covered in those thorough set of documents that Han's talking about. Han, you wanted to say?
We literally, forgive me, dear environmentalists, we literally kill trees on projects. Okay? you have to have sufficient, not just sufficient information, but current information for your construction team. It's very important. I mean, even for a small renovation, knock out, you know, change a few walls, we don't dictate and write the rules. We will confirm it with the city. And we in general, we've been in here this long enough, we know what typically you require, okay? Sometimes your renovation could be just a couple pages. Sometimes it could be 20 to 30 pages. It depends on the complexity. Yeah, it's the permitting process doesn't have to be arduous. If, you know, if you have people that know what they're doing and doing it right, then it should be a pretty simple process to go through. Again, it's time is money. So every time that you have to, answer questions that related to the drawing that's being submitted. If the first letter that you get, when you resubmit it, a few days or a few weeks later, depends on how much need to be done. You're back on a pile. You'll be back at the bottom. If you do that a couple of times, you burn up a couple months. Easy. Okay. So time is a thing.
Let me give you an example, Han. Dr. Bill's doing a small addition on one of his buildings, and it's I believe it's around 900 some square feet addition, three operatories. And you know how many drawings we have on that? 24 sheets of 20, and the drawings are 24 inches by 36 inches. So they're not small little pieces of paper, but there's 24 separate drawings that make up that set of documents that the building official has to review for just a small little addition. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, everything from specifications, requirements, and then on top of that, there is two packages of engineering calculations for the energy code as well as the mechanical code that have to be submitted, that the engineers had to put together, because that's part of what's the requirement for your MEP. So it's a fair amount of work and it's a fair amount of detail, but when the building official looks at them, he'll have everything that he needs and he'll have it done in a short period of time. Now, there are some kind of creative things that you can get into, and I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about them, and it has to do with the permitting process. A lot of people don't know that this stuff exists. The building official and the plans examiner are really pretty nice. They're pretty nice people. For yeah. Most part, they're really good people, and you know they're not highly compensated for all the crap they're given, because everybody yells and calls them up and say, why aren't you done, and I want this now, and you know those kind of stuff. But if you work with them from the very beginning, and that's why Han and I always, when we start a design project, we will have an initial concept and we'll try to do our best to have a sit down with that plans examiner or the building official and go over the project with them to get an understanding that they understand what you're trying to accomplish and you understand what they would like to see. So it's a collaboration between the two. And then when they see those drawings come through, after everything is all done, they'll say, yep, that's exactly what we talked about. Boom. You know, it just kind of, what do you want to call it? Greases the wheels. So that's an important thing to do. Another possibility thing, let's say you're running into a time crunch and the builder wants to get going, but the permitting isn't done yet. And maybe you're running out of weather or you're running up against a availability of contractor, that kind of stuff. There are some creative things you can do. There's things like a foundation permit. foundation permit you can ask for, and a lot of municipalities will give that to you for a small fee. But a foundation permit lets you and your builder start the building before the whole set of documents is reviewed. So it allows the builder to get in there and, you know, dig the hole, put in the foundation, do whatever is necessary. It could, you know, they could give you some leeway, could help with the schedule. The other thing is called a framing permit. A framing permit is where the builder is allowed to build the frame of the building, meaning the skeleton, but he can't cover anything up. So they can put the skeleton in, they can start on all the necessary pieces and parts on the inside. Again, that buys some time in the schedule. So there's a couple of those creative kind of things that you can do. Now, if you're at a major commercial project, there's a lot of times where you have multitude of other permits, but that typically doesn't work for dental offices. Those really, the two that I just talked about, the foundation permit and the framing permit, really are the two norms. Everything after that, by that time, the building official is done with everything that they need to have done, hopefully. All the information's there, and then you can move on to the final stuff, which is when they start putting in the electrical and the plumbing and everything else that they have to put in, and then get their inspections and then, you know, be able to cover things up. So there is some creativity when it comes to actually getting a permit, but you have to have someone on your team who understands that and has a working relationship with the building official so that they can ask for those things. Because if not...
Jim, that is a strategy that you can implement. Is there any additional work and or cost to go that route in terms of services?
From the design side, probably not. Because it's still the same documents, the additional cost is really just the review fee. Because each one of those permits are going to have a little separate fee, but that tends to be small. We're not talking about tens of thousands of dollars. You know, we're talking about maybe, you know, a couple hundred bucks. So
no, I mean, I'm not talking about fees. You know, and fees that involve in the permitting process. Okay,
right.
Because you're breaking down a single package into multiple packages.
Yeah, I mean, it causes us more work, you and me.
Yeah.
It causes our engineers more work. And, you know, typically we should be compensated for that little bit of more work. But it's not a lot of work. We're not talking about
right.
It doubles our fee. It doesn't do that.
It requires a little bit more coordination. For the sake of expediting the process, instead of a single package of drawing, it's broken down into pieces and parts.
Don't expect it for free. right.
I mean, whoever your design team is, if they know the situation and the strategy that you're going to use, because you want to take advantage of, of the weather or timing or whatever the situation is. If they know that up front, they can structure their services around that particular strategy, and then they price it accordingly. Otherwise, they'll be caught by surprise, and then they will ask you for more money, and it create a little bit of miscommunications, and things like that, and you certainly don't want to come to your team expecting more work and then tell them that they're nickel and dime you for a service that they rightfully have earned doing the work. Right, Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So, we talked a little bit about a lot of aspects around that whole thing. Do I really need to go to the trouble to get mechanical or electrical or plumbing drawings? More than likely, yes.
Yeah.
Do I really need to get a permit? More than likely, yes. Every case is different. So, you know, so go to someone like ourselves. We'll be able to help you review what's necessary so you can develop a plan of attack. But don't expect to be able to just go in and make adjustments to your space or add a new little addition or, you know, listen to what a builder says that's, you know, maybe saying, well, I'm going to let my team do these necessary documents so that we can save you money. Because more than likely, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't save you money because it costs you more time. And having that extremely thorough set of documents, even for a small addition, will get you through the process quickly, get you started, get you under construction, get your builder moving forward so there's very few questions, and get the thing opened as soon as possible so that you can start utilizing it. That's the reason why you wanted it in the first place, right? You wanted to use the thing. You want to build those extra operatories. You want to build this particular space this way. You want to change that sterilization because the old one doesn't work. You want to add this, whatever it is. So you want to be able to get in there and get to it as fast as possible. Well, the quickest way to do that is to have a seasoned design team along with the necessary engineers that can produce the really thorough set of documents that's necessary to be able to get that thing started and get it built and get it finished. Sure, that costs money, but it's pennies compared to what's a month loss on 3 operatories. A lot of money.
It's a worthwhile investment in your office. Okay.
And that's a good point, Han. This is an investment. And it pays dividends. Big time.
Yep, it does. Okay. We encourage it. Again, you know, it's part of the things that are required. There is very few scenario where you can skirt around it. I will run away from people that tells you don't have to do anything because nobody care. No, I've only run into a situation once, and that's a few decades back, where the project's out in a boonie, and there is no such thing as building code. So, you know, those are crazy places, but in general, everything, anything, every building where people are occupied, you will require a building permit and drawings. It's, you know, it's usually 99% of the time. So I'll just leave that 1% just for those rare occasions. But we have not run into a situation where you can modify a building without drawing and or permit. Jim?
Yeah, it's just a level of what the modification is going to be, what the requirements are going to be. And each case is going to be specific to you, what you're doing, and what the building department and building officials are going to require. So hopefully this has been helpful. Hopefully we've answered some of those questions and the thoughts and at least given you some knowledge to think about when, you know, someone approaches you and says, oh, you want to do this? Well, I can do this or this and this. Well, you have now a basis of knowledge to be able to say, really? Why? Why can you do that? Because if they're saying different than what Han and I have talked about, you know, you want them to thoroughly explain it to you that makes sure that they actually are able to accomplish what they're saying. So with that,
indeed.
Thanks for spending the time with us. And Han, I'll let you have the last words.
I can't believe that we just blew through an hour, Jim.
And we did
hit everybody,
all of it.
Yeah. Appreciate everybody plugging in. Again, hopefully the information that we convey had, have, let me say, enlighten you on a few area, or at least caution you in a few area, but it's all well intent. Again, we had a great time doing this. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.